Drive Time on 91.3. Always on the cutting edge. Voice of the Cape, Drive Time, welcome to the show. It's a Friday, and on a Friday we sort of throw our shoes off, not really, but we just relax a bit because we do books on Friday Last Lap. And this particular book is entitled Effendi of Erzurum at the Cape. It's Sheikh Abu Bakr Effendi. It's the life and times of Sheikh Abu Bakr Effendi. And in studio is the author of research that was done on Sheikh Abu Bakr Effendi, which has been translated into English. Dr. Halim Cen Oğlu, if I got your surname correctly. My Turkish is absolutely terrible, but Dr. Halim, assalamu alaikum. You're laughing at my Turkish, aren't you?
Aleyküm selam. It's not a problem at all. Halim Gençoğlu.
I'm Gençoğlu, sure. Yeah.
That pronunciation is difficult for all other people as well.
Yeah, as I say, my Turkish, as I say, is very, very bad, and most Turks laugh when I try to talk to them.
Don't worry about it.
But let's have a look. What inspired you to start researching and having a look at the life and times of Sheikh Abu Bakr Effendi, one of the key historical figures? Yeah. For Islam at the Cape, you know, you've got Sheikh Yusuf of Makassar, you've got Tuan Guru, being scholars, and then it fast forwards to Sheikh Abu Bakr Effendi. But what inspired you to have a look at his life and times?
Shukran Shafiq. Abu Bakr Effendi, actually, he was just one of the great scholars in Ottoman history. I mean, when we look at the other historians who wrote about Abu Bakr Effendi, some of them exaggerated the role of Abu Bakr Effendi in history, and some of them do just other way around. I mean, they criticize it unfairly. What we did as historian, we look at the archival source, particularly in Istanbul, Ottoman archival documents, which are never been extensively used in any studies before. When I look at this, I see that Abu Bakr Effendi established not just as a religious scholar, he also established substantial political and religious links between Ottoman Empire and South Africa, and as well as South African Muslim society. For instance, maybe you are not aware of it, but Angora goats, which came from Turkey, Ankara, and in South Africa, we sell it here as mohair goats. All these, even mercantile relationship, has been established by the. I mean, if you look at the history, they were all. You will see the relationship between Abu Bakr Effendi's great contribution to the society.
Yeah, when you mentioned Angora goats, I suddenly realized, but hang on a minute, that is actually, it's a Turkish word, isn't it? That's been changed a little bit.
Yes, Angora is...
I mean, we say Angora, and...
Yes, it became Ankara, yeah. Angora is actually must be Greek origin, the name, then became Ankara. But in Ottoman time, we would still call it Angora. We didn't mind to call it Angora.
So there you go. If you're wearing a jersey or something, it's got a Turkish influence, an Ottoman influence. Interesting.
Yes, right, yeah.
Now, if we look at Sheikh Abu Bakr Effendi, before I read your book, I've tried to read a lot about him. I've read the diaries of Umar Lutfa Effendi, which are very interesting.
Yes.
But when it came to Sheikh Abu Bakr, I couldn't help but feel that he has been misunderstood. And particularly by our own historians, yes. I think as well, to the extent where people have accused him of lying in court, which I don't think is the case. We can get to that particular instance.
Right.
Am I correct if I assume this, that his full story, that you've finally now managed to tell something of his full story, that his full story, until you did it, hadn't really been told?
Unfortunately, that's true. I am saying unfortunately because, I mean, even in Turkey, we didn't seriously study on Ebu Bekir Efendi. Mm. The one important thing we have to understand here and explain here also to the listeners, Ebu Bekir Efendi's life cannot be explained without South African source, cannot be completed without Ottoman source and South African source. I mean, we have to use both of them.
And you were lucky enough to have access to Ottoman sources because you read and understand Turkish, which most of us can't.
Alhamdulillah, yes.
So you were able to, in a sense, give us almost 50% more knowledge.
I mean, it's just, as you said, it's lucky me. I came here and I knew Ottoman language. When I studied in KEP archive, I saw lots of documents in Ottoman documents in the archive, as well as in our university library, Jagger Library at the University of Cape Town, and I translated them. Actually, this became source of inspiration for me to write a proper biography of Ebu Bekir Efendi.
Now, in writing his biography, Cape Towners didn't know very much about where he came from. I think Izurum, he was originally from a Kurdish family, then he moved into Turkey, became a scholar from a scholarly family. But I do believe he's also got a very noble lineage, in fact, Sheikh Abu Bakr Efendi.
Yes, that's right. The one thing I must correct it now here. Unfortunately, that's another mistake made by previous scholars who study on Ebu Bekir Efendi. He wasn't actually Kurdish. Mm-hmm. His because of his homeland, northern Iraq, Şehrizor, they assume that Ebu Bekir Efendi is Kurdish because Kurdish people mostly live in northern Iraq. Mm. However, firstly, the Kurdish people in northern Iraq, they are Shafi. Ebu Bekir Efendi wasn't. Mm. And the second thing, Ebu Bekir Efendi, we only have the documents about the lineage of Ebu Bekir Efendi. It mm-hmm. just show us that Ebu Bekir Efendi was from Quraishian family. I mean, he was Sayyid, came from the family of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Mm-hmm. So if we have only this source, I mean, even some of scholars say he was Turkish scholar, that's also not true. I mean, we need to talk about the lineage of Ebu Bekir Efendi, the documents studies only show us Ebu Bekir Efendi was Arab origin, mm-hmm. but in Ottoman Empire, it's right to call him Ottoman scholar because...
Well, that's what he was. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's all we can say about him.
No, it's actually very interesting that... So ultimately, one could say that he came from northern Iraq...
To Erzurum,
yeah.
But the family was originally from Erzurum. Uh-huh. Erzurum is a very beautiful historical city in the eastern side of Turkey. Mm. We call it actually Paris of the East. Mm-hmm. It's very modern and historical as well, city. His family is actually called Emcedi. Emcedis are, we know, like Alavis. They are Seyyid family. Mm-hmm. And there is not any Kurdish or Turkish connection with Seyyid and Sherif families. They live there and they establish religious schools, madrasas, and for centuries they taught there. Mm-hmm. I mean, his great-grandfathers also there. When I find the family trees of Ebu Bekir Efendi, I also put it in his tombstone when I was renovating his grave in 2013. I also read that the original tombstone, his great-grandfathers also were just like him, they dealt with education and religious knowledge, to separate the religious knowledge. So we can see that easily he was coming from a very established family and educated family.
And of course, the story of him coming to Cape Town, the story that we know in Cape Town is that the community here realized that they were going into a crisis of Elam. The imams got to the stage where they were actually saying, we've got these kitabs, but we can no longer read them. And I think it was a parliamentarian, Darul Bey, that approached the British government to approach the Ottoman government, because at that time, Ottomans and Britain were friends for a while. To call for a scholar to come to actually help the community. Is that correct, that story?
That's right. Rabbi was staying actually in Chapin Street, very close to...
To the community.
To community. And he was also honorary consul general of Ottoman Empire.
Uh-huh. Mm.
Not, he wasn't just in the parliament, in parliament, but also he had a link between Turkey and South Africa. So... as you said, he realized that there is a religious dispute between some Muslim communities, groups. So he understood that he needed religious guidance, but not just book, because who is going to read and interpret books? I mean, religious books. Then they ask scholars from London first. Cape Colony was, of course, a British colony. Then Queen Victoria asked Sultan Abdulaziz. That's how actually this arranged. I mean, Ebu Kefendi was arranged by the two states.
Mm-hmm.
Then they sent Ebu Kefendi to South Africa via London.
Now, he must have been a famous scholar already. To put into perspective, the Sultan, the Ottoman Sultan, who's ruling a lot of people, millions of people, happens to know through his officers that Sheikh Abu Bakr Effendi is the scholar, the man to be sent to the Cape Colony. That tells us that Sheikh Abu Bakr, he must have been known as a famous as a scholar even before he came here.
That's correct. He was working in Istanbul in the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Turkey. In those days, the scholars were, I mean, Ottoman scholars were not just knowledgeable about the history of Islam and law, fiqh, but also they were knowledgeable about political affairs and some other things in state. And he was working in the Foreign Minister of Turkey, then in Ottoman time. He was chosen, and of course there was kind of examination, and he passed the examination. Even I read these papers in the Ottoman archive, and Sahib Efendi, another scholar, tested him, his knowledge, and they realized, of course they asked him as well, I mean, would you like to get this mission to do? And he accepted. Even he had a wife in Turkey, a wife and children. He that's actually a really big sacrifice. You know, he just say that, okay, this is, I think the people need really guidance, religious guidance, and he left his country. And imagine, we are talking about 150 years ago. He came here in 2 months. It took two months to came here from Turkey to South Africa. I mean, this is really admirable. Not only this, then he came here and he realized another problem, the language barrier. He learned English, but it wasn't successful. I mean, not sufficient, because the community was speaking in Afrikaans. Then he learned Afrikaans. And he taught those people in Afrikaans language. I mean, he established the first school for Muslim women in Cape Town, which are all explained in my book. And it, by the way, I want to say that it's available in Timbuktu book.
I was going to ask you, you've done the commercial before, that's no problem. So we're discussing Effendi of Erzurum at the Cape. It's the life and times of Sheikh Abu Bakr Effendi, the author, Dr. Halim Jen Ulu. I'm nearly got it right. he's the author. It's a good read, because it actually fills in all the missing links in terms of the life and time of Sheikh Abu Bakr Effendi. And you were saying that he comes to the Cape, he learns Afrikaans, Bayanuddin, the one work that he did as well.
Right.
Another interesting thing is that it was quite tough for him, wasn't it? Because he came into the Cape when people were very Shafi obsessed, but they were not knowledgeable Shafi, because a knowledgeable Shafi would recognize a Hanafi scholar immediately and sit at their feet.
Absolutely, yeah.
And something I picked up that is very interesting is that one of the grandsons of Tuan Guru,
Abdul Raqib,
very bright young man who was an imam at the age, he was an imam in
Nur al-Islam
in 17 years of age.
Correct.
He sat at the feet of Sheikh Abu Bakr Effendi.
Yes, right. Yeah, I mean, when he came here, because Tuanguru's family, they're knowledgeable people, you know, because of course that, you know, educational background.
And they recognized that in Shira, that here was an alim.
And of course, and there were other also particular educated families, like Dolly families, Hendrix families. So I read all those documents between in Kep Archive, between some communities. I just realized that, I mean, I also wanted to know, really, I mean, understand the dispute between also between some communities, some families. And not only Abdul Rakib, Muhammad Duli is another interesting man. Muhammad Duli, he was, you know, local, from local family, Dolly family. He became, he also established interesting link between Ottoman Empire. Then he got honorary title Efendi from Ottoman Sultan Abdülhamid. He was called after that Ebu, Muhammad Duli Efendi. If you go to the Hamidiye Mosque in Cape Town, I put there glass cabinets and all these documents. I put there all those documents and I translated them to English, of course, for the audience. I mean, the people who visit the mosque. You can see there. Until actually the apartheid time, there were still very interesting and important substantial relations between Turkey and South African Muslim Society. Even, you know, that Ottoman fez were used in Muslim Society until 1960s.
Yes, in fact, the interesting thing is, and what we're going to do, Dr. Halim, we're going to break away for news. We're going to carry on chatting for a few minutes after that before we do what's trending. But let's take a quick break and we'll come back.
Okay, sure.
And welcome back to Voice of the Cape Drive Time. We're discussing the book Efendi of Erzurum at the Cape, Dr. Halim Cençoğlu. My Turkish is terrible, but nevertheless, what counts is the book that he's done. It's about the life and times of Sheikh Abu Bakr Efendi. It's important for us to know our history, so we're just going to extend things for just a little bit longer. When you look at the contribution of Sheikh Abu Bakr Efendi, and of course the relationship of Cape Town's Muslims with the Ottomans, it's amazing. We've got, there's an Ottomans cricket club.
Yes, right.
There used to be, one of the choirs used to be called, I think it still is called the Ottomans.
Yes, it's true.
So the influence has always stayed there, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we have to look at his legacy. I mean, what legacy he left behind. Then you can see it actually how Ebu Bekir Efendi really contributed to society. He, after his death, I mean, his even he his children, they were very educated. They became teachers in one Kimberley, Ahmet Atalla Efendi, the another one in Port Elizabeth, and in Cape Town. Today, Bukhap Museum, for instance, that's also belong to another Ottoman scholar. When Ebu Bekir Efendi died in 1880, Ottoman Empire didn't neglect the Muslim Society in South Africa. They sent another Ottoman scholar, Mahmud Fakih Efendi, also professor, but this time Shafi.
They learned, yeah.
Exactly. They didn't want to cause any issue. Mahmud Fakih Efendi was from Mekke, but remember the Mekke was part of Ottoman Empire in those days, I mean, until actually First World War. Mahmud Fakih Efendi established another school in Castle Street. And now we are renovating Bukhap Museum because Mahmud Fakih Efendi, he bought the 71 Way Street, which is Bukhap Museum today.
Yes.
But then until 1978, that house, the family and children, grandchildren, they live in that house. 1978, unfortunately, apartheid time, they forced them to move the house, and it became Bukhap Museum. But today, and Iziko and family, I find the family members as well, we are renovating the house now, kind of actually we are redesigning the mm-hmm. house, and we are putting there the all documents about Ottoman Empire, and particularly family, what family left, of course religious books, documents, family photos. And even I mean the Book Up Museum is very important museum in Cape Town.
It is, yes.
And it's also, I mean, it also belonged to Ottoman scholar. I mean, Hamidiye Mosque one here, its name come from Sultan Abdülhamid, because mm-hmm. Sultan Abdülhamid helped the structuring of the mosque. Another Hamidiye Mosque in Newton, Johannesburg, it's also, there is also a link between Ottoman Empire and that one. The Mescidul Nurul Osman in Pal also get the name from Ottoman Empire. And as you say just now, Ottoman Cricket Club established mm-hmm. by the students of Ebubekir Efendi. Because of that, you know, lovable relationship. But unfortunately, in apartheid time, they wanted to break all these memorable historical relations. And today we are just talking about this, like just good memories.
No, absolutely. And it is interesting that you actually renovated the grave of Sheikh Abu Bakr Efendi. I can remember for many years you'd have to actually dig in the grass to find it.
Correct, yeah.
And the headstone, I think, had even fallen over, if I'm not mistaken. It was.
That's rude, yeah.
You had to really dig to find it. And I came along one day and there it was. Almost brand new, and yes. But of course it is important that we do remember these people. And if you hadn't have restored his grave, there's a possibility there could have been a housing estate on top of it, because people just didn't know or didn't respect the people who were actually buried in the town of yes. Baru, and Sheikh Abu Bakr Efendi being one of them.
Absolutely, yeah. We must remember these people. I mean, I am now also renovating the grave of Mahmud Faki Efendi in Mowbray Cemetery. Mm. If you remember in 18...
Where exactly is he buried in Mowbray, if anybody's interested to...
Mahmud Faki. Mm-hmm. Mahmud Faki is... he was buried... he's another Efendi... I mean, his also surname was also Efendi. Mm. That's why they call these people... They taught, actually, I mean, scholars like Ahmed David... He thought they are all from the same family.
Same family.
But they are not actually.
Yeah.
One of them is from Erzurum, other one is from Mekke, originally different towns. Mahmud, if you just go straight into the...
through the gate?
Through the gate, yeah, you will see it just on the left. We are still busy renovating that one.
Right.
Mahmud Faki Efendi. Mm-hmm. And Ebu Bekir Efendi's other son, Hisham Nimetullah Efendi Müderris, he was also a very great scholar. He graduated, he got his professorship in Mekke in 1894. Actually, he is a very interesting man, because I find a very important article about him in 1903, published in Kepagus. He was fighting against racial discrimination in South Africa mm-hmm. because they were also classified him as colored, Asiatic. Not even he was Turkish man, but mm-hmm. because of his religious identity, he was classified as non-white. And if you look at all these important contributions of Ottoman scholars, I think there are much things to talk and write about.
It certainly is exciting, and I hope that the second book is underway, the second part of research, because it's incredible that as we sit here right now, we are still discovering so much
Absolutely.
About the history of the forefathers of this community, and the fact that they came from so many different places, and in spite of that, there's a community here that actually came that is a result of diversity.
Correct.
And an amazing diversity from, as you say, from the Ottoman Empire to Makkah to Southeast Asia to Africa to absolutely everywhere. It really is very rich, isn't it, the heritage?
Right, yes. I also would like to mention that this relationship is not just... It mustn't only consider as Ottoman aid to South African Muslim. Mm. Because why I am saying this, I find other important documents. When Ottoman Empire were fighting, I mean Ottoman army was fighting against Italy in Libya, now it just turned around. South African Muslim, I think more or less support to Ottoman army. They start to send money to Ottoman army. That's very amazing. I mean,
yes,
this actually shows how the relationship was really genuine. You know, because if you just help someone, and that relationship is not going to be really very, I mean, remarkable relationship. But imagine the Ottoman Empire was such a great empire, Islamic empire, but in this Muslim, they didn't forget Ottoman Empire when Ottoman Empire was in difficulty. They sent money. I find these documents in
Kep
archive.
This is absolutely amazing. Yeah.
And they, in First World War, even from Mozambique Muslims, they sent money to Ottoman army. The Ottoman Marta, they died in Balkan Wars and Tripolis in Libya, Italy, when Italy was occupying Libya. I mean, this is amazing, really. That's why we have to learn about these things and understand how the relationship became really like, you know, kind of Islamic brotherhood.
Absolutely. Destroyed completely by apartheid, unfortunately.
Absolutely, yeah. Unfortunately, that's true. Yeah.
Dr. Halim, we're going to leave it there, but of course your book on Sheikh Abu Bakr Effendi is available at Timbuktu Books. Pop around there. Effendi of Erzurum at the Cape. It's also got a lot of interesting documents in it. It's got photographs. And if you understand Turkish, it's also got Turkish as well. It's also in English.
Yes,
don't worry.
Languages.
Family trees, everything, press clippings and everything. And a WhatsApp coming in here and saying that the Murat family of Paul, they've got connections into the Effendi family as well.
That's right, yeah. I know them. They're very good people as well.
They amazing something. And of course, another one coming in. The Ottoman Empire was dismantled on behalf of the Zionists. Well, the sad thing is the Ottoman Empire did fall. But Dr. Halim, it's been a pleasure chatting. You have to come back. Second book, we look forward to that one.
Inshallah. Yeah.
Talk about the absolutely fascinating history between the Muslims of South Africa and the Ottomans, now between South Africa and Turkey. Shukran, thanks for talking to us. Everything of the best.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Shukran. Salaam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salaam.